Welcome to a Q&A episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast, where you bring your questions about sex and love and intimacy, and I answer them in a way that provides insight and hopefully instruction to people wherever you are in your journey. Today, we talk about the insecurity that happens in early relationships, the challenges of dating when you're older, and the steps that really mark the healing journey to be able to find love so that you can know where you are in that process. So stay tuned to this episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page. I'm a psychotherapist. I'm the author of the best-selling book, Deeper Dating, and the host of the Deeper Dating Podcast, the creator of the Deeper Dating Intensive and of deeperdating.com. And I'm so glad to be with you here today, where we're going to be taking questions from you, the listeners, about sex and about love and about romance. And I'm going to give some responses to these questions in ways that I think will help everybody think about their intimacy journey. So I want to really kind of personalize it and universalize it at the same time as I give responses. And if you're interested in the deeper dating path to intimacy, you can just go to deeperdatingpodcast.com and find 190 podcast episodes and a wealth of resources. And if you join my mailing list, it will help you actually begin a structured journey toward deeper intimacy in your own life with lots of free resources. And if you join my mailing list, you'll get all of that plus lots more. So I hope to see you and have you be part of my ongoing community of learning. So I'm going to jump in right now and bring up the first question. The first question is early relationship anxiety. People do their growth work, let's say, and they find themselves in a relationship that feels different. It feels like their partner is generous, more available, kinder. It's like some of the old patterns are not happening, and it's really exciting and it's new. And I get so many thank you emails from people who describe that happening for them. But something that often happens right after that is a kind of anxiety. And the anxiety can look like the wave of distancing, something I talk about a lot, which is like the greatest single saboteur of healthy new love that I think exists. And it's where somebody is available and kind and decent, and there just is not that kind of drama. And all of a sudden, your interest kind of plummets. You like notice their flaws. You lose attraction to them. You want to take distance. You think there might be somebody better out there. All these kind of things happen. And it's very disconcerting. And so, I mean, this is something I talk about a lot because there is a pathway through and out of that. And I'll talk about that a little bit today. Or let's say it's not that the person feels close like that. Let's say you actually even jump from feeling like, oh, I need space, this might not be right, to the person doesn't call you on a night that you thought they were going to call you, or they're busy longer than you thought. And all of a sudden, you start feeling this longing and this insecurity and this fear. And it's like the polar opposite of what you were feeling just recently. And then there's like the nameless anxiety of like, I just don't feel right. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel at home enough. Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this the right relationship for me? And our heads can just spin and spin and spin. So I'm wondering if any of you relate to that experience. I know for me, I had that for a pretty long time in my early relationship. And so I want to offer some thoughts about what to do with that and then just share some stories. So I guess the two main things that I want to say are that the task that we need to do when that happens is get out of our heads to the degree possible, because our heads are going to be like, oh my God, did I make a terrible mistake? Should I be out of this relationship? Is this person wrong for me? Am I unavailable for intimacy and this is just my crap coming up? Is this my insecure attachment style, my anxious attachment style? You know, we're in our heads. And we don't get a lot of good answers there, although we do get like rich and juicy worries, which can sustain us in a not very healthy way. We could like chew on those like for long, long amounts of time. I know I can. So the task, I think, is to drop down into your heart, your nervous system, your needs, and your personal experience, and notice what's going on. Honor and dignify your confusion by listening to it and asking yourself, what am I feeling now? What doesn't feel right? What would make me feel more right? What is my discomfort saying? What's my body saying? What's my heart saying? Drop into that and then honor that in a way that is kind to you and the other person. But the bottom line is that I feel like if we don't make room for that anxiety, it becomes a pressure cooker. It becomes more intense, more painful. It takes us over more. And when we make room for it and listen, oh, it's just such a relief when we see, oh, it kind of makes sense that I feel that way. Maybe given my past, maybe given a recent interaction with my partner, maybe because there are parts of what I need with pacing and communication and connection that I felt frightened to say or timid to say, or I didn't think they were valid. And then the next step is to act based on, like to really dignify those needs and wants by acting on them. And that might be telling your partner, you want to touch differently. You need more space. Something they said made you worry. Something that happened in the interaction brought up hard memories. It's like really, I mean, I just want to acknowledge it's so brave to do that. And it's a jump. It's a leap because we have to leave our together self and move into our interdependent self. And that is hard because culturally we are taught that we have to be in our together self, and our interdependent self needs the other person, needs to be listened to, needs to be heard, needs to be validated, needs to be touched, needs space, whatever those needs are. And we're so used to overriding that, which is the path to non-mastery in intimacy. And I'd like you to just think about this, how this relates for you in terms of either reflexively telling yourself you're wrong to feel this way, telling yourself your partner is wrong about whatever, spinning in your head and building your anxiety that way, versus saying, I'm going to listen to that anxiety. It wants something. It needs something. It needs to be seen. It needs to be listened to. Doing that and then finding a way, in many cases, to share that with your partner. It is brave as hell. In our intensives, for the people who come into the intensives in relationships, oh man, is that a hard task. Sometimes in the 6 months, it takes months for them to be able to do that. But then they do that and it makes the hugest difference in the world, because that's how we find out if a relationship is right for us or not. And also that's how we learn to honor our core gifts, because in your insecurity lie your core gifts. Your insecurities speak to core gifts that have not been given enough language, given enough voting rights, given enough room, given enough dignity. So we experience them as insecurities as opposed to aspects of our being. Okay, so that's one, is the dropping down into your nervous system, making space, honoring, and then acting on that. The other is more of a concept. And the concept is this. It's that we have different layers of experience going on at once. You might have a layer, and think if you've ever experienced this, like somewhere in a relationship, in sex, or in conversation, your head is telling you you feel one thing, but then all of a sudden you're crying, or all of a sudden you're laughing, or all of a sudden you're like dying for sex or contact, but your head was telling you something completely different. It's because we have different layers. I think of it as like a river with different currents, like maybe the top current is running one way at a certain speed and intensity, and the next current down is running at a different speed and different intensity. And all of those are going on at once. And I think that that's an important thing to know, because what it means is that when you're in relationship anxiety, you have other deeper levels going on as well. And I'm going to share a very personal story about that with you. Greg and I have an intimacy coach that we work with. And for years now, we do this process called the Tantric Hug. And it's a really beautiful process. And actually, I've interviewed my coach, Grant Shepherd, newconsciouspathways.com. And he's putting together a little mini free training on this Tantric Hug. Anyway, so, and you'll get to hear about it. But so we do this Tantric Hug, which is like looking at each other and holding hands, and then touching foreheads and staying connected and breathing together. And then like that lovebird thing where like you wrap your neck into each other, you both do that. And then hearts touching together and then closing with holding hands and looking at each other. So we do that. And, you know, that's a way you experience really different levels. Cause in your head, it might be, oh shit, I didn't put away all the dishes. And then all of a sudden your necks touch and you're like, whoa, you experience like a really different layer. But recently I was sharing with Greg something that I had never shared with him like that before. And I don't know if I ever shared it with anybody before, but it was true. So I shared it. And it was that even though consciously there's no reason for me to feel that he doesn't like love me a lot, there is a part of me that believes that at any moment he would just leave me. He would just leave. There's nothing to prove this at all. But some part of my head will not own that I am loved, and that that love is deep and strong and present and consistent. Even though it's proven to me in so many different ways all the time, there is a part of my brain that knows that that cannot be true. So I said that to him, and I said, that gets in the way of my really surrendering at times. And I never acknowledged this like strange part of my being that just knows that love can't last. I mean, it makes sense given my history and how many broken relationships and betrayed relationships and the Holocaust and so many different things, but I hadn't put it into words yet. So we came up with a plan. And the plan is that now in the evenings when we do our hug, he looks at me first and he says, I love you and I'm not going anywhere. And somehow this really helps. It really helps me calm down and believe in love. But if I didn't have the bravery to listen and acknowledge that voice, listen to and acknowledge that voice, and then ask for something, I wouldn't have been able to have this like new and really cool healing about something that I thought was kind of intractable and unmovable. And I'm wondering if you relate to this in any way, and if it touches for you something that you might be able to do to help those parts of you feel listened to and kind of get what they need. So vulnerable story there. And those are the thoughts that I want to share about early relationship anxiety. There's lots more there, but those two thoughts were just ones that I hope are helpful, touch you, and I really do, if they did, encourage you to sit with them, reflect on them, and kind of like play them out in your head and how they would relate for you. Okay, number two, somebody who was married twice, has now been single for 25 years and is in her 80s and is looking for a relationship and said, do you have any advice for me? So I do. I got a bunch of things to say here to every human being who is listening, who is wondering if your age is going to stop you from finding love. And this is what I want to say. I want to say, first of all, there are the reality of numbers and ages and et cetera, et cetera. And that's real. That's true. But the other thing I want to say is that finding love doesn't work that way. There is something else at play, which is so related to your self-organization, who you are, how you show up. How in touch are you with your longing for love? How much do you honor it and validate it? And if you're in touch with your longing for love, you honor it and validate it. If you do the deep work of learning to treasure your heart, your authenticity, and if you get support in that, that's what we do in the intensives. That's what we spend so much time doing because we really need support in being able to name and champion these parts of ourselves. We need help. We need help because it's a lifetime of learning to do the exact opposite of that in so many cases. So when you can do those things, like owning your core gifts, living from them, owning your longing, owning the dignity of the kind of relationship that you want, and you live from that and beam that, and then in addition, you are brave because you got to be brave and get out there and interact with people. Your luck changes. Your luck changes because there's a German saying that a child brings its own luck. If you're not accessing the magic of your deep heart, if you're not sharing and expressing that, then the luck that comes with that inner self, which is where your magic exists, won't shine. And I know so many stories that go against the narrative that, for example, older men are all selfish and they only want younger women, or it's a numbers game and at a certain age, you won't be able to find love. I really know people in their 90s. I know people, I've talked about all of this, who were diagnosed with a life-threatening illness and finally found love because something else is at play. And when you do the shift, like because if you think there's no one out there for me, my luck is really, really bad because of my age, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you won't beam. You'll protect. You'll hide. When you're in your beauty and you're open in that way as being who you are, you will beam, especially if you're in environments with people who share your values and interests and passions. And you practice this, like living from your authentic self. And the entire deeper dating curriculum, that's exactly what it teaches you. So if you do sign up for my mailing list, you'll get tons of stuff that will help you be able to walk that path. As you do that, there's something else at work. It's not just numbers. It's not just logistics. It's not just odds. There's something else that happens. And that something else is a kind of magic. So for all of you in your 80s or beyond, like this woman who wrote to me, for all of you at any age, I want to honor the fear I want to honor the fact that it's scary. I want to honor the fact that the numbers game might not look too good, but there is so much tremendous power in owning yourself and your gifts, leading with those parts of you, doing the work to learn what have been my negative attraction patterns and how can I begin to shift that? Walking into the world and asking yourself, with whom does my soul feel safe and seen? And only connecting with those people. When you do all of that and combine it with getting out there, which we have to do, and you know, I always talk about a hybrid in this regard. Three things: online dating, online communities, which are not dating sites, and in-person events, especially with people who share your values. Biggest bang for your buck, baby, that's where that is. Even if you have to drive hours to get there, it is worth it. Or taking an Uber, it is worth it. So those are just general thoughts that I want to share. The main part being that the way that love is found is different than what we were taught about how love is found. There is a deeper physics that you want to tap into, live, use, and leverage. And when you do with support, because this stuff is too hard to do alone, with support, not alone, not alone, not alone, you will find so much changing and you will find your luck changing. And I really believe that. And last but not least, I want to talk about the third question that was brought up. It actually wasn't so much a question, but an acknowledgement. And I think it's an instructive acknowledgement. This is somebody who wrote to me who has been doing the deeper dating work and described a few different things. She described the inner mentor process and how she uses it every morning. That's episode 3. And it's one of the most powerful ways to tap into the beauty of your intuition, your deepest self, your emerging self, to get guidance in an ongoing way, life-changing guidance, guidance that will take you out of your brain and into your wisdom so fast and bypass your inner critic at the same time. It's really fabulous. Episode 3, or if you join my mailing list, you'll get that in other ways as well. You'll get recordings and a journal, etc., etc. So she's doing the inner mentor process and loving it, and it's guiding her. So she described that, which is a fabulous thing, because for all of you, I want you to listen to the whispers of your intuition, because this is an intimacy journey. It's a wisdom journey. It is not a number game. It is not a game of gimmicks. It's a wisdom journey. And every piece of wisdom that you pick up from doing the conscious work and then live will expand and open and change the very tapestry of your future. That's an amazing, amazing thing. The inner mentor process will help you do that. So she talked about that, and then she talked about her core gifts and this discovery that her vulnerability, her enthusiasm, her openness were all things to be treasured, not to be ashamed of, that those were parts of her that were beautiful. And, you know, the process of coming out as LGBTQ is an existential leap, because the world might tell you there's something wrong with you. So you have to make this existential leap where you say, no matter what I've been told, I know that my survival depends on loving myself and championing myself and treasuring what's in my heart. Our core gifts are the same thing. They're parts of us that have not been honored, not necessarily been understood. And it's this existential choice that we make of saying, I'm going to honor them, and I'm going to look for the people that honor them. It's like, it's this leap out of this morass of insecurity, not that it's immediate, but it happens, onto the solid ground of my heart is who my heart is. And I'm going to be brave enough to be with that. It's existential. So when we do that, so she was describing doing those things of really embracing these qualities of vulnerability and enthusiasm and how much better she feels doing that. And then dating from that place. These are all the different stages of this gorgeous, powerful wisdom journey that leads to love and spiritual and emotional healing. And then she described what does happen over time. It's a different timing for everybody, but she said, and I just recently had a date with somebody who was so different than anyone I've dated before. There was a kindness, a goodness, an availability, a sense of really being appreciated for who I am. And it was a beautiful date. It was beautiful. And he was a beautiful person. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to call me or I'm going to call him or anything is going to happen. But I'm just so excited that something so different happened. And I think that on this hard, hard journey to find love, it's so important that we mark the progress and the milestones. In my intensive, every workbook assignment begins with noting the shifts that you're experiencing and reflecting on those, because we need to do that to support our growth. Something that you experience as growth, but subtle, is actually quite significant. So I just wanted to share that story because it holds so many markers that identify the conscious journey to love and where it leads and how it leads there. So I guess hope, honoring, and the beauty of discovering your inner wisdom as you go is what has changed my life, what has changed so many people's life, and is for me the joy of being able to teach this. So thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast. And if you like what you're hearing here, subscribe and review, please. Thank you all.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.